three-part music class. Feel Music Podcast. What is it, man? Feel Music Podcast. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to another episode of the Frio Music Podcast. In this episode, I interview Gypsy Moon at the Boulder Theater. During the interview, you will notice that there's some music playing in the background. That is Devotchka warming up for their set. So it is fun. It is live. It is a representation of the band in their home environment. They're playing. They're on the move. They're playing with big acts that tour the nation, that tour the world, that headline festivals. Devotchka is a spectacular band, and it was amazing to see Gypsy Moon and Devotchka in the same place. So you'll get a little Devotchka preview, and maybe someday they will be on this podcast. But for now, this is Gypsy Moon. Can't say enough about this band. Really looking forward to their current works in progress and all their future works.
My name is Silas Herman, and I play the mandolin for Gypsy Moon.
My name's Matt, and I play the bass.
My name is Mackenzie Page, and I sing and play guitar and tenor banjo.
I am Andrew Conley, and I play the cello.
Where did you guys meet, and how did you decide what instruments were going to be in the band?
Whoever wants it. Well, we've sort of been through a lot, and the arrangement of the band now is a little bit different than it first began. Matt just joined the band about 2 years ago, so we started out with a different band member then, and I've been through a couple things, but this current arrangement is just sort of what has felt the most natural and right. And as far as choosing our instruments, it's kind of just like we all had our own musical backgrounds and sort of brought them together and turned it into something.
I think probably the most interesting thing. I mean, it's all fairly standard except for the tenor banjo is kind of interesting. That's a little different. And then I think the cello is probably the thing that catches people's attention the most as being kind of different. So I guess maybe we could have Andrew answer why he decided to play the cello.
All right. But before that, though, actually, I met these guys at Rocky Grass. Best festival in the world, man. That place changed my life. I met Silas and Mackenzie both there, and then I met Matt later. And playing cello, I used to play mandolin, and mandolin's just a fucking awesome instrument. But it's there's a lot of mandolin players out there that are pushing it. Like Silas, he's fucking incredible, dude. It's like takes a lot of dedication to push yourself outside that pack, you know, no matter what it is. You know, and then I just, I don't know, Crooked Still. I was influenced by them in a way. Someone introduced me to them, and that pretty much changed the game. It's just like, oh, wow, that's, you can do that with that instrument. You know, that's a really cool possibility. So basically, it's just a big fiddle, you know. It's, I felt like, you know, for violins, there's fiddles, the opposite equivalent of that, the more informal variation. For cello, there really isn't a word for that. You know, there's no reason why that is. It's just, and I saw, like, there was a lot of mandolin players. There was a serious, there was not a lot of cello players that were pushing outside that box. So it seemed like a really good plan in life to focus on something like that. You know? All right, I'm going to give her this microphone.
So were you guys exposed to music from a young age? Or what inspired you to pursue being a musician?
I definitely grew up around a lot of music. My dad actually played in a band, Leftover Salmon, for like over 25 years now. So he was on the road a lot of the time me growing up. So I was always surrounded by a lot of like acoustic, sort of bluegrass music with that influence. And really just got into it and got a lot in my head. And then when I was maybe like 12 or 13 years old, decided to really start taking it seriously. And started with the guitar and eventually transferred over to mandolin, which I'm mostly playing now.
So was your dad your teacher?
He taught me a fair bit to begin with, definitely, but then, I don't know, I tried to kind of go outside of that musical genre, too, and just get my own sort of sound, too, somewhat. All right.
Go for it. Yeah, you didn't
answer
the last question. Yeah. I did not grow up playing music. I found music when I was older. Yeah, I just started, I had a friend who played, and I would borrow his guitar and sing and play with him, and just surrounded myself by people who were really awesome at it and learned.
I played a little drums, a little guitar growing up, but it wasn't until, you know, early teenage years that actually happened, and then mandolin when I was 16. Yeah, my family wasn't really into it a whole lot, but now they are. You know, I think, yeah, Rocky Grass, that festival got everyone in my family kind of playing music in a way. Yeah, my dad was a big record collector, though. He had like 15,000 vinyls when he died, so he would have been really happy to know that that's getting carried on a little bit, you know? He was a big fan.
Yeah, I played in school. I did like orchestra on the bass for a long time. That was fun. I was never very serious about it until I graduated from high school. And then one day my friend was like, hey, do you want to come play bass for us on the mall? And I took my grandfather's bass, which I had for a while, but I never ever played it because I never practiced bass. I basically would just go to school and play and have fun, but I never took it seriously at all. And I ended up getting like blood blisters from playing on the mall for an hour, but it was just an interesting experience because I never realized that people could pay you for playing music. Like that never really, like we played on the mall and we each got like $20 and I was like, whoa, like this is crazy. I just had so much fun and I made money. Like, so I basically just started doing that a bunch, like every day. And it's kind of how I started doing it, you know?
Was your grandfather's
bass
stand up?
Yeah, it's the one I play. And my grandfather played music in New York, played jazz for like 80 years. So kind of got some history there.
You guys have a very unique sound, and you've come together with different backgrounds. Are there any artists or genres in particular that have inspired you to pursue the music that you create today?
I feel like just being in Colorado in general, you're sort of in like a mecca of a lot of amazing musicians and a lot of inspiration and a lot of young bands and bands that are also more progressed. And we have a lot of friends that have been through you know, the sort of same sort of cycle of growing as a band. So we've seen that, you know, like there is a hope in the future and just had a lot of inspiration from a lot of people in that way, definitely.
What time do we have to? I'm mostly inspired by older music for the 50s. It's mostly what I listen to at my house. That and funk, which is kind of interesting, but that was kind of my parents' music. So I grew up listening to like, yeah, like not necessarily like a lot of like kind of disco funk, I don't know, like 80s and just like late 70s funk, you know, like Rick James and stuff. So I don't know, it's kind of a weird combination. And then I just ended up getting really into Django Reinhardt, and then from that I just kind of only been listening to really old music and funk for a long time, which is kind of interesting, and like traditional gypsy music too, so.
Yeah, I like old music too. My favorite right now is Edie Piaf. I can't stop listening to her. So that's kind of singers, I guess.
For me, I guess musically a lot of fiddle players. But when I listen, I mean, it's kind of whatever my mood is into. It could be anywhere from like Bach to Naughty by Nature to NoFX, you know, or bluegrass, you know, old time music, a lot of old time music. So, I mean, it's across the board. It's more about whatever you're feeling at the time, I think, you know. I mean, I do music anyways, whether it was for that or not. But, you know, they just help keep you going, influence you.
How are you able to highlight individuality of a particular instrument while still maintaining a, like, cohesive sound?
I think something that's really helped us is we're really open-minded as a band. So like someone will bring a song and maybe, you know, it's totally kind of an entirely different direction than we would normally go. And we just do it anyways, you know, so we're not really trying to put ourselves in this whole like genre of like, oh, we play this one kind of music, so we must stick to it. It's kind of like, hey, let's try that, and then let's go this way. And then this, lately we've been doing where we like combine songs, and there'll be one genre and a totally different genre just smash next to each other. And it's kind of really fun. Like we do like the Dark Eyes song, this really gypsy song, into a kind of a, what would you call that? Like, what would you call Say Israel? It's like, Calypso is like, so we're like, yeah, we do that a lot too. We take traditional songs, we totally do spins on them, like really old traditional songs. But yeah, we've been like liking doing that, you know. We go from like a Latin vibe into a Celtic tune, kind of stuff like that. So I think that's kind of something that we've been really digging lately.
And so were you referring to like separation and like how we set each other up for solos and stuff like that? Yeah, I think a lot of it is, I mean, trying to be aware of like your ranges and stuff like that, and to not step on each other's part as much as possible. Actually going from a 5-piece band to a 4-piece band has made that way easier too, in a way. I mean, we had some good people we played with, but when it comes down to it, it's especially with cello, as myself, it's always trying to figure out where my part fits, like in a puzzle, you know, to try to not muddy up every, like, the bass, or get, you know, where the guitar or tenor or vocals. Yeah, it's a delicate range, and so it's always really case by case. That's the thing. It's not really one formula, but there's definitely patterns. I don't know.
We recorded our last album at a Silo Sound in Denver, and actually had Tim Carbone of Railroad Earth produce it. But we've made a couple other recordings. We have some friends up in the mountains that we've recorded a couple little like EP sort of things at. Our first record we did with Dave and Enyan Tiller from the band Tarka at their house in Lyons, which unfortunately got destroyed in the flood, their studio, which made our first album there. But
how do you go about, you know, creating a song?
I mean, every song is definitely different. It's kind of like it's its own little being. But lately what we've been doing is, you know, someone will come up with a basis of it and bring it to someone else and be like, hey, here's this. And usually like two people will come together. Like we've been doing a lot of collaborating, like, you know, Matt or Andrew or Silas will bring me something and say like, hey, I have this idea, it's these certain parts, write some words to it. And so it's really fun and freeing and really helpful to, you know, widening your own personal perspective on music, because you're working off of something somebody else wrote. So it's kind of a really nice broadening of your own ideas and their ideas.
Also, I think it's just definitely case by case. You know, when it comes to like where ideas come from, like there's a lot of times I might have like just a bass melody or some chords or something like that. Just try to pass it on and see what, you know, here, try this out. See if this works, if you can come up with anything with that, you know. And a lot of tunes have happened that way. Sometimes it's more specific though. Like you might, I don't know, a lot of times I'll want to hear tunes where, you know, there's definitely arranged parts to them, you know. And so it just takes some working through to figure out what works with our instrumentation and actually if it's a good idea or a bad idea or not, you know. It's a lot of trial and error in a way, you know, of just testing out stuff between us. So
do you guys have any future songs or albums in the works that are going to be released in the upcoming year or so?
Yeah, we're actually releasing an album this spring, so yeah, in March. Yes. Yeah, we recorded at Silo Sound with Tim Carbone, and it was Kickstarter funded, so we appreciate to all those people that have helped out. And yeah, it was a really fun album, a lot of in studio kind of stuff, you know. Yeah, we just got the masters yesterday, so we were listening to them. It's definitely a more produced album version than we've ever done of our music, so it's been really fun to kind of like, let's add this here and let's do these crazy harmonies there. And you know, usually we're kind of like a one take, that's what you get, but it was really fun. And then actually we just recently last week went into this studio up in it's called Mountain Star Studio up in Rollinsville, really close to our house, and they record straight to tape. So it was kind of fun to do like the exact opposite, to just like literally one take, and that is all you get, you know. So that was really fun too. So we did two tracks there. We'll probably release at some point here or there. So it was an 8-track tape, and it was literally straight to tape, and then they turn it into digital after. So yeah, so in the spring, look out for that.
Yeah,
It's called Sticks and Stones.
So you guys have a management company and a manager. How is it working with a manager, and what are the benefits? Are they enabling you to focus on your music while they worry about all the scheduling and booking, or what are the benefits there?
It is awesome, because like that moment we just had, we don't have to worry about that kind of stuff, which is great, because really that's like half the battle when you're becoming a musician is like the business side of it, which, you know, when you're an artist, you don't want to think about that kind of stuff and have to like promote yourself and worry about this and that, and they just do that for you. So it's really nice.
Yeah, it's also hard to kind of promote yourself like self-righteously, saying like, hey, this is my band and we're so great and you should hire us. So like having a separate party to sort of do that for you is very helpful a lot of the time.
All right, now these ones are a little bit more individual questions. Were there any particular artists that have inspired you in particular to pursue the mandolin?
Sure. I actually started out playing the guitar. You know, I had like a musical upbringing, and then I really kind of like drove away from the bluegrass I was brought up around and kind of got into like electric guitar and sort of started out there, and then transitioned back over into acoustic guitar and eventually mandolin, which I'm mostly playing now. But some of my bigger influences have been like Adam Steffi and Chris Keeley, and some of those guys are just really great bluegrass players a lot of the time. But I've liked to sort of expand past just that genre in my own playing too. So take influences from all sorts of things like jazz and whatever.
How do you push yourself to that next level?
Oh man, just practice constantly. It's constantly a battle, constantly sort of, you know, the cycle of like getting beat down and then being re-inspired to do even better.
Practice, hate yourself. Well, Matt, your bass playing definitely adds like a lively bounce and rhythm to the music, and you guys don't have percussion, and it seems like in a way you kind of fill that rhythmic section. Obviously, you're all playing different melodies and different rhythms, but how do you, as a bass player, elevate yourself to that next level? How do you improve? Was there anybody who kind of guided you along the way? Perhaps your grandpa?
Unfortunately, my grandpa was like, my dad is really old, so then my grandfather was very old. I honestly started playing music like right as my grandfather died, which sucks because I play a lot of swing, which is the stuff that he played. But I would say my biggest influences on bass have been Chris Wood, Jimmy Blanton, one of the local guys around here. Garrett Sayers is really amazing. What did you ask again? Oh yeah. Okay, now I remember. Sorry, I'm really hungry. I can't think. I liked the first part of the question that you asked, because I had a kind of a realization last week when we were playing, and there was this band before us that was really good. Their rhythm was really tight, actually, but they didn't have a bass player, and it was just a string band. And it kind of made me realize how much rhythm the bass adds in this circumstance, because it was like it was really all there. Like their rhythm was really good, but because they never had that bass to really like make any one beat like this is where the beat is, it just kind of never really moved people. I know, I think it moved people, but it like never really like push them to move, you know what I mean, like where it really hits them. And I like watching interviews with like really old bass players because they always have really amazing things to say, and it's really funny. And I was watching this interview with Milt Hinton, he's the most recorded jazz bass player or jazz musician ever. He's on like 9,000 recordings and no one knows who he is. And he's, you know, he's just like this like 90-year-old guy, but he's just like playing some bass line, he's like, I like to play like this, you know, because this is, I like to make people know, like, this is where the note is, you know, like, and that's kind of what I've been trying to do lately, just really, like, be like, this is where it is, like, be very definite on the rhythm, so, I don't know.
All right, well, Mackenzie, I don't know how long ago you started playing vocals, but I would be interested to know that, first of all, but your vocals seem to just drive some of the songs and lead the direction for everybody else, and you all make great space for each other. But you know, how did you become such a strong vocalist and so quickly, and was there anybody who guided you along your path?
Oh man, you never really think about this kind of stuff with yourself because you're always like looking forward. I guess I started singing. I mean, I really loved singing Disney songs as a kid, so I kind of, you know, I still do. I still sing Disney songs. So, but you know, so singing has always been in my life. I didn't play an instrument until I was like 18. So I was a little bit older when I picked up an instrument and had any kind of form of training, I guess. So, you know, singing's always been in my life, but I just kind of wasn't really out there with it. You know, it was a hidden kind of personal thing to me. So that was definitely something kind of coming out of that shell and really, you know, connecting with the people in the audience to, you know, the voice is such a, it's such a connection that we have to other people. And that's something I really love about singing. And I think that's something I aim for, is just really trying to have that conversation with the crowd as if you're in the room with one other person, but you kind of take them then somewhere else with that, you know? So it's really just like this very personal thing that you kind of have to give your all to. And it's really hard to do that. And I think that's why I didn't sing until I didn't start playing music till I was older, because to me it was such a personal thing. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of what I aim for and what I look for in my own vocals when I'm listening back. Like, could you understand what I was saying? Could you hear, did it sound like I was, you know, speaking or connecting? It's really just about connection to me. So, and you get a lot of that from old folk singers, you know, like Joan Baez, or like, you know, the ones that just really sat down and told you a story. And I just love that kind of old stuff. And I'm really into Edith Piaf, and, you know, even though it's in French, it's just still like, she has a lot of English stuff too, but she just has this really old sound to her voice, and I think it's just so timeless, and I'm just really digging that right now. So, and you get a lot of that from old folk singers, you know, like Joan Baez, or like, you know, the ones that just really sat down and told you a story. And I just love that kind of old stuff. And I'm really into Edith Piaf, and, you know, even though it's in French, it's just still like, she has a lot of English stuff too, but she just has this really old sound to her voice, and I think it's just so timeless, and I'm just really digging that right now. So,
yeah. You just told me off mic that you recently got a strap. Does that change the way that you're playing? And does that like enable you to run around on stage as opposed to being kind of locked into one corner? And it just seems that your cello adds like a depth to the music, and it creates, or your the melodies which you choose to play seem to create a like a different direction or a depth. Can you kind of speak to the way you play and anybody who's influenced you along the way?
So yeah. First, yeah, the strap is kind of new. It's way fun. It's called a Block strap. So I have to give a shout out to Mike Block. He's a inspiration cello player for me. So he invented the strap system, and actually it lines up really, really nice. So it feels natural. It really is. Like, you get it in this spot, and it's just like you're sitting down, except for it follows you around like a baby strap to your chest. And so it's a little bit of adjusting. If it's not set up just perfect, certain stretches might be a little hard to get, but if you get it set up right, no problem at all, you know? It adds a little bit of difficulty, but it's twice the fun. So it's a good trade-off, I think. And, you know, that gets easier as you go on, too. But yeah, as far as cello adding depth and stuff like that, yeah, it definitely does, man. It's the kind of the mid-range that you don't really hear in string band setups very often, you know, and which makes it kind of difficult to find the part sometimes, because you don't want to step on someone else. But yeah, it's like an extra dimension that now that I'm so used to it, it's kind of, when I go back and listen to a lot of string bands now, I feel like it's lacking something, you know, but that's just me personally, you know. So, but yeah, as far as influences too, you were asking. Yeah. Let's say Crooked Still, a great band. I think they're still playing a little bit. Rashad Eggleston is one of the players. Tristan Klarich also played cello. Both fantastic players. Natalie Haas. It's a really small club, really, of the non-traditional cello players. But I really appreciate what they're doing.
Can you talk about your first live performance? Any fears that you experienced and how you overcame that?
Yeah, I definitely fall in a pretty unique realm, just having my dad be a musician. He would bring me up on stage when I was, like, extremely young before I could even play an instrument and just, like, leave it up there plugged in without... So I could just kind of go up there and stand there with the instrument, not, like, making any sound or anything. But I think it definitely made me, like, feel natural on stage and get past that whole thing before I even, like, really got into music. So then once I did, there wasn't a whole lot to overcome, but... I will say that that fear factor thing definitely in some ways makes you play better, though, and, like, certain people just, like, knowing really amazing musicians are there that you look up to a lot and stuff will definitely, like, make you play better and push you.
I had kind of a funny first, like, besides playing in school concerts and stuff, I'm not going to count that. Like, my first, like, personal music concert, I remember I was playing electric guitar and, you know, I was like super excited. It was like I think it was like a talent contest at my school. And I was like so excited to play. I was just so pumped. We were playing one song. And then, so it was like classic thing where the curtain came up, you know, and there was like three electric guitars, a bass. And like, you know, it was like probably really shitty, you know, and my amp just didn't work. It just like didn't work. And then, honestly, like, seriously, the curtain went down when we finished the song and my amp like turned on. And I just remember I was so furious. Like, I could not even talk to anyone. I was just like, I just remember my mom being like, it's okay. You'll always remember that your first concert was like the worst. You know, it'll be a good story. And I'm finally get to tell it. I'm glad.
Oh, man. I don't know if I have a good first concert story. I think mine was at like one of those farmer market kind of things down in my town. So it was just me and this other girl playing music together.
Were you nervous?
Oh God, I get nervous now. Like, even still.
How do you overcome it?
Well,
alcohol. Get a beer.
Can't tell the children that. But really, that's one way. I do have a drink before I go on stage. But really, that's like, I don't know. I guess I try to forget about it, kind of. Practicing. We practice before we play. And every time we do that, we are just so much tighter and, like, feel better. Because that's something, especially with acoustic instruments, when you plug them in, everything, the whole world's different. So it's like, if you can play a few songs acoustic and remember that, like, that's how it sounds, and it sounds great. And then you get up there and sounds all crazy, you know, because you hear something different than the crowd's hearing usually. And then you just reassure, I know, Jesus. And then you just reassure yourself, like, it's all good, you know, we can, so warming up for sure. But just, that's half the battle, is just getting up there and doing it. It's awesome when you do and when you let loose.
Wow, Devoshka's awesome. Oh my God. Yeah, just so listeners, we're listening to them sound check right now, and they're amazing. Yeah, you know, a beer helps, I think. You know, you get a little nervous. No, it's not. It's not for kids. Yeah, if they're kids, they're on the internet and they're going to dark places. So they've seen worse. oh man. But yeah, I don't know. I think my first time on stage, I guess the first band I played with was like a kind of a traditional kind of bluegrass string band. I played mandolin, and I think the first time that I met them, it was like a jam at this festival. And yeah, they pulled me on stage that night too. And it was just cool because there's a bunch of hippies, you know, a bunch of young hippies just eating drugs and having fun. And so it was like, ooh, wow, I can play bluegrass to young drugged up hippies and they're going to love it. This is great. This is a good, bright future we have. So I've been staying on that path since then, I guess, you know. Did that sound bad? Did that sound bad? Okay. Yeah. That sounded professional.
So this is along the same lines as the previous question, but do you have any, and you may have already answered this, but do you have any interesting, strange, or odd pre-performance rituals?
Shit, I don't even know. I guess I like to stretch sometimes. That helps me sing better. Definitely as a girl, like, I just like getting ready. It makes me feel better when I leave the house and I'm like, you know, I've done something slightly with my hair and I'm not just like rolling out of bed. Although on tour it gets hard because I eventually just like roll out of the bus and go play a show. But just having a moment to myself is really one thing I really like to collect myself, no matter what's happened that day. Collecting yourself, because then when you go in the audience, you know, you have like, you have a responsibility to them to really give them your energy, you know. So it's like if your energy's all crazy and out of there, it's like nice to do some breathing exercises before you go on. I don't know. That's probably mine.
Probably the one weird thing that I like. I don't always do it, but sometimes I do. Is it's a little trick I learned from Jaco Pastorius, and supposedly on his rider, or like every show, he would have like a bucket of fried chicken in the backstage, and you just eat some before you play, and it just gets all over your fingers, and just feels really nice on the bass. Like, it's like the opposite. Like, I don't think it would work at all for any, like, a mandolin or something where you're holding a pick, but because you're just using your fingers, it gets on the bass strings, and it's like almost like a lubrication, a bass lubrication system. BLS, bass lubrication system. That's what a bucket of chicken is.
I mostly just have like a certain sort of picking exercises and stuff I do to warm up, just get the fingers moving and wrists loose, and that's about it. And smoke a lot of pot. Yeah, scales, that kind of thing. A lot of, like, just picking technique, right hand kind of stuff, just loosening up.
Do you have any advice for a musician starting out today?
I feel like in the end, it's really, like, the music that prevails. And there's a lot of bands that, like, do make it from, you know, through social media and these sort of things. But the best ones that have, like, a sustaining sort of audience, I feel like, it just have really solid music and a unique thing. So I'd say just, like, finding yourself and your own sound and just like exploring that as much as possible, really, before even getting into the business side, and really like becoming as passionate about music for your own reasons.
Yeah, I would say I have like two pieces of advice. First is just like play as much as you can and just find some buddies and, you know, just kind of get weird with it. And because, I mean, that's how I started, is just like, you know, just jamming for like hours and just with our eyes closed. And that's how I kind of found myself. And now I feel like with this band, it's a little more refined, which is good. But I think you need to go through that first stage. And secondly, if you want to be a touring musician, make sure that you don't really hate being in cars a lot, because it's like, honestly, that's one of the things, like, I didn't really realize, but it's like being a musician is like 60% driving.
That's the work part.
Yeah. I mean, it's work, you know, everything is work, but it's just, if you're not the type of person that wants to be in a car a lot, then you probably should find something else, because it's not really going to work out. Or at least a touring musician. You could be like a studio musician, I suppose. But
I know, it's interesting to be asked that question, because I still feel like we're such a beginner band too. But you always kind of feel like that in your own growth. You know, you always kind of feel like you're just getting it now, you know. But I guess my advice is just not to like worry about it, and just play and play out as much as you can. And the manager thing is nice, because he, you know, we call him mom. I mean, he just takes care of everything, and so it allows you to really just focus on the music and not have to worry. I mean, the times we have to worry about like getting people to a show and all this, it's just, it gives you so much just like weird anxiety, but just not to have to worry about that kind of stuff is awesome. But you know, it's just, yeah, about the car thing. You spend, and that's the thing about finding people to play with too. You spend a lot of time with each other in a very small space, you know. So that's definitely, I've learned more than anything than I've ever learned as being in a band. That's for sure. And not just about music. So it's been awesome. It's I recommend it.
Yeah, music's fun. Yeah. So I'd say that the first thing, yeah, is work on your music. Like I said before, try not to suck as much as possible. But try to be unique too, though. Don't try to. So many, a lot of bands will get in that program or cycle of you know, trying to imitate their heroes, you know, stuff like that, which is nice for learning, I think. But if you're making an act, you can't really do that, you know. Well, I mean, you can, but it's hard to say how far that will go.
So sometimes it does. You never know. You know, I think, but having a good singer too. It was a Tim Carbone said to us. He was like, a few steps to, like, you know, success is that, yeah, have good songs and have a really good singer. And there was something else too, but that's probably the most important thing. Yeah, and be really fucking lucky. Yeah. You know, I mean, having a manager too, we got lucky to kind of have, you know, some management and, you know, representation earlier on. But actually, but our managers, like, well, we first started with our buddy Kayum, who it was his first time managing a band. And it was, yeah, and then, you know, he left and we got Ryan in there, and it was his first time doing it too. And, you know, so I'd recommend.
Find a friend that's just really good, yeah, along and really business oriented.
Totally.
And business,
yeah,
minded. And
Yeah. If you got a friend that's really OCD, can write lists and type emails and wants to party a lot, he's the man. You know, just be like, hey, dude, you know, you got much going on. You want a side hobby for a little while, make a few bucks, and then eventually you'll make a lot more, you know. So, yeah, you know, if you got a friend, get him involved. Fucking have him manage for you. Because, yeah, he's killing it now. He is the shit. I love our manager.
Where can our listeners keep up to date with your tour schedule and your latest releases and learn more about Gypsy Moon?
Facebook is honestly the best. Facebook or Instagram, Gypsy Moon Band on both of those, G-I-P-S-Y Moon Band. And also, you know, our website, we keep that really updated as well. It's gypsymoonband.com, so G-I-P-S-Y moonband.com. And yeah, those are the best places. Facebook, you kind of get a more personal view of us, where the website's a little more formal, so.
Well, thank you, Gypsy Moon, for sharing your knowledge and sharing your time. And I'm really excited to publish this. And thank you again for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
This episode was brought to you by Frio Labs, bringing to life creative, innovative, and always custom website designs. Need a website? Learn more at friolabs.com. Need a discount? Use the coupon code FMPODCAST for 10% off of your order. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.